This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, April 6th, 2011.
Okay. Today, Wednesday, April 6th, 2011, employee assembly meeting. It is 12:18. Any late additions to the agenda for today?
I think on behalf of Linda Cole Howe, that she would like to add a discussion and a little feedback around the faculty and staff assistance program.
And is she going to be here?
I think she's going to be here, and if not, I'll be happy to talk about it.
I'll add that to new business. So jumping into business of the day, the first thing we have on our agenda is some discussion with Bill Pry on the United Way campaign. So you
would you like to join us?
Join us at the big kids table? And
sure.
I didn't know you were here.
Story of my life.
Too quiet.
Bill, I also wanted to let you know that later on the agenda we have the academic calendar committee. We can move it up if you would like to be a part of that conversation.
So I think my major discussion question is, and Gary is knowledgeable on this as well, whether we have sort of a permanent pledging system for United Way that would allow you to, have it as a payroll deduction, have it go from year to year with an opt-out provision that's easily done. I just want to know what the reaction might be to having that as an option for United Way pledging.
So this is something that you and Paul mentioned briefly when you were here in the fall, but we didn't get a chance to really discuss it.
Right.
So this is your chance to...
People's pledging, it doesn't roll over now.
It doesn't roll over. You have to opt in each year.
So this would run similar to how the wellness program operates now, so that once you're a wellness program member, every year you kind of get an email reminding you that you're a member and you have until such and such a date to opt out. If not, you're assumed to opt in?
I'm not a member of the wellness program, but I do pay my dues at Hegel, and I have to do that every year. I have to give them a check. Maybe it would be something like that, but I don't know.
Yeah, I wish Beth was here because she could talk
wellness.
A little bit about
wellness
it.
Wellness like
oh, good. But it's nice because I don't have to actively do anything. It's just there.
Right. And that's relatively new. It's only
exactly,
been
two or three
right.
years maybe.
Yeah. But there would have to be a very clear opt-out provision that would be, first of all, the opt-in would be voluntary. You have to sign up to opt-in. And then you would get a notice every year and you could increase your pledging. each year, but it would be less burdensome, I think, as you identified for the wellness program. But there would have to be a clear opt-out option every year as well.
Is this a system that exists, or you're planning to build, or is
does
it
not exist as far as I know?
Okay,
so this would be we're very much in planning stages, and we just trying to get ideas.
I was wondering if how much of it could maybe be integrated into Employee Essentials or something that we already log into, that some website can be configured to where people can go in and check a box, or maybe even PeopleSoft where you go to update your official.
You are well beyond my expertise. I don't have a clue.
Kurt?
Okay. I don't know how to articulate my question, so it might be a long ramble, but there is a question.
Okay.
When doing this, I guess, have you looked at how many people actually do the salary deduction, and is it a high percentage? Because I think one of the benefits about doing the drive and reminding people, it creates support in building and get people who might not have even been a part of it in the previous year for the United Way to maybe do that one-time donation or at least hear about why the United Way. And I feel like, you know, it does create the convenience that you no longer have to contact these people anymore, but it also might distract from
this. Okay. But I think Gary might be able to answer that better than I. I don't know the answer to that, how many people do the payroll, but I assume it's a vast majority.
Yeah, but the percentage of Cornell staff who contribute to United Way is really small.
Yeah.
Compared to our other institutions. So it's like 16%. And we've been stuck there forever.
Well, no, but I just know that the reason why, like, I gave this year, like, even on top of you, but the really what happened was that my supervisor got her reminder, United Way, you know, to sign up, and she talked about it. And I just think that if you just have this simple, you're automatically enrolled, that conversation might go away.
Those two things are not mutually exclusive. We're not talking about eliminating the campaign. The publicity and all of the communication would continue to happen. It's just eliminating a step for the people who are already pledging.
I know, but what I'm saying is part of that step of them repledging was what engaged me to pledge. And I just think by saying we still might have this campaign going on, but the people who constantly give might become disinvolved because they're already continuously giving. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think that's where the conversation that really got me in my office involved was when our supervisor had the conversation, because it reminded her that she needed to re-pledge and stuff.
But I think
your supervisor.
I was wondering if people pledge more each year, though, sometimes. So if you were, like, at a $50 a year level, that you'd stay there instead of maybe next year getting $75,
I don't know. Gary, what do you...
No clue.
Those are all, I think we're really at the beginning stage of this. And I think we have a fair amount of conversation to go through and investigation to go through before having a proposal and how it actually works. I think, you know, the details have not been looked at all. I think the cabinet was really interested in getting a reaction to the idea of having sort of a continuing, people being able to opt in to a continuing payroll deduction.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
It seems to me that it's a win-win. I mean, it's a win for the employee who wants to just continually can keep giving at a certain level and set it and forget it, and then a good for the United Way campaign because it's, I mean, just like business, they want your credit card on file because if you set it and forget it, they keep making money every month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so this is kind of the, you know. And then maybe the campaign, to speak to Curtis's thing, is the campaign will still try to get new people and then ask the people that are already in this program and say, well, can you give a little bit more each month this next year? And then here, go to the website, opt in, or go over to the website and up your limit a little bit. But yeah, to me it really sounds like this, if you're going to give and you want to continue to give, to have to continually renew and re-sign up every year just seems very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
I
try a
lot.
Yeah. Maybe that's work for you too. You don't have to, you know, reach out to all those people again and again every single year. You know.
Well, you're still going to reach out to them and give them the option, but the thing that I like about the idea of just a continual opt-in unless you opt out is that conceivably you can contact via email, which saves the mailings, and that's one of the biggest things that I hear from staff is why are we printing and mailing all of these things? It's not sustainable, it's, you know, costly, that kind of thing. So to be able to move to a situation where I'm just going to get an email reminding me, last year you pledged blah, blah, blah to United Way, you know, if you want to opt out or increase your pledge, go to this website. And then you can go right there and click on it.
Yeah. Any disagreement or it's okay? Mm-hmm. You're even very quiet. Uncharacteristically.
I hear myself talk all day. It's nice to be quiet.
Okay.
Nothing.
So
do you want me to participate in any of your other?
Do we want to talk about the calendar now? Or
we can. If you have 10 minutes, why don't we bump up the Academic Calendar Committee discussion to, since Bill's here and he sort of convenes that committee?
I said sort of.
We had a discussion over email last week about where the committee came about. It was instructive, I think.
Right.
I sent out a document to you earlier, maybe the end of last week. Mm-hmm. Oh, there, and there are copies. Good, because I left mine in my office. Mm-hmm.
There are two copies. So who else wants those?
So the Academic Calendar Committee has been meeting during this calendar year, academic year, and has developed some basic principles about how the academic calendar could be designed that's slightly different from the way that we are functioning now. And I think the things that are most pertinent to what we're thinking about are probably the fall semester specifics and spring semester specifics, because that gets down to the nitty-gritty of what it might look like. So what we would be doing is having two breaks each semester. Right now we have two breaks in the fall and one in the spring. We would be adding a second short break in the spring. And adjusting the start time for the spring semester so that we start earlier and end earlier, no longer ending on Memorial Day, or having commencement on Memorial Day, but having commencement sooner than that.
Wow. That affects the hotels and everything.
It affects everything.
Wow.
We're not looking at doing it next year. Five years out, is that right, Bill?
Yeah, the calendar is set 5 years in advance. So it would give people time to change. I have to say that these are possibilities.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, nothing has been decided. These are the principles that this committee is putting forth for feedback. What else is we also, I think it's important to know, are talking about coordinating with IC so that we don't bump up against their schedule, so that we're still in concert with them, but not at the same time that they are having their opening and their graduation. So we're distributing it to all of the assemblies because the assemblies are participating in the process and are looking for feedback, comments, and any kind of reactions to it.
I think from a staff perspective, I like that you're putting some breaks in there around kind of when school breaks are,
mm-hmm.
so it may be easier for staff to feel like they could take a day off during like that President's Day break because
mm-hmm.
it'll be quieter on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a positive thing for staff.
And that's very intentional.
Yeah. Other comments? Yeah.
Does this coincide with, I saw someone was talking a month or so ago about not assigning work to the students during their breaks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe this is totally unrelated because it's just the calendar, but seems like it would go hand in hand with this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that way on?
Those are somewhat unrelated.
Yeah.
The Faculty Senate passed a resolution saying that essentially that faculty shouldn't dump on students during breaks.
That's already in place.
There's no teeth in that. It's a sort of a best practices recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
The calendar is separate from that. There are some, I think, Leslie identified some issues that will hopefully reduce stress and make for a more efficient academic year, if you will. Also, because the spring semester and the fall semester currently are significantly different. The fall semester is 67 and a half days. The spring semester is 70 days at the current time, and that. If you have the same course in both semesters, it makes for a bit of a challenge having the same course in both semesters. But I think And you did mention the spring break, and that we'd be adjusted so we'd have right now we have 8 weeks of the spring semester before spring break, and there's no break at all in there. And that can be a brutal time. In particular, the week before spring break for students, I think, is awful because it's awful for everybody, right? Because the faculty want to get everything done so they can go on break. The students get dumped on because they have all these assignments due before break. And everybody is trying to get ready to go on break, and it places a lot of pressure on people. So I think if we have that shorter break, in the meantime, I think that will help alleviate the stress. And the idea is that breaks should be breaks, and this is consistent with the faculty resolution. That students shouldn't have to spend all their time doing schoolwork during break. And certainly I felt that way as a student, and I certainly feel that way as a faculty member.
It's going to affect the trustee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
You already have that.
Mm-hmm. We have 5 years hence.
Most of the staff is really concerned about the trustee calendar, too.
So. I'm telling you. I just wanted to be back.
You're right. But we did also hear from the trustees that they would be supportive of moving commencement.
Right.
Off of Memorial Day.
How might this affect Tempa and her colleagues?
In terms of time off?
Yeah.
Well, we're still open the same number of days. Because the length of the spring semester will still be 70 days. So it would mean that if Trillium closed, for example, to use Tempa as the example, during the President's Day time, we would be open longer at the end of the semester or at the beginning of the semester. So in balance, it's the same number of days. And in fact, it's more days in the fall.
Yeah, so there is a slight difference. We go from 67.5 to, well, one of our recommendations will go from 67.5 to 69 days in the fall. It actually will go to 69 days in the
fall. Oh, 69, okay.
From 70.
Thank
so
you.
It's a gain of 2 days,
ish. Excellent. It's a gain of 2.5, actually almost even. We go from what is 137.5.
138
days.
Where's the half day?
It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Oh,
we're all working well. Okay. It doesn't feel like a half day for us. can we work out that?
That's a half day.
Curtis,
Has there been any conversation of what low income students would do during this new break during the spring semester? Because I just know I have a few students who I work with who are dependent on like the dining for their meals and stuff, and when we create this extra break, that might be an extra day where they can't get meals because they
We don't close all the dining halls during breaks anyway. There always is food available on campus because students stay on campus. So we didn't talk about that issue, but because the dining halls and the residence halls remain open, there's still is food available.
Yeah, actually, we're expecting to have a really intense community-wide discussion on this issue. The principals, most of us can agree with that too much problem. It's when there's an actual recommended change in the calendar that everything will happen. So I think a lot of those issues won't be discussed in detail until we have that recommendation. And we are expecting to have a fairly significant conversation around any proposed change. I mean, this is a big deal. When some students come here, they get accepted. Their parents make reservations 4 years from the next commencement in hotels and camp. So it's really a huge issue.
It's wishful thinking.
I was able to read it, so I appreciate the opportunity to comment on it. I think shortening the winter break, which I think speaks to Gary's question about how it impacts dining workers, that potentially is a 5-week period that dining workers may not be able to work. And so I think it shortens that period by doing this, and I think that's a really good thing. And I've always, well, effectively, the students come back a week before classes start anyway, most of them, many of them. So I think that's a real easy one. I think I would like to understand more how we're dealing with the study period or not. Those of us who've been here for a long time remember 20 plus years ago when when there were changes in the wind to eliminate that study break, and I think just as you work through this, being able to address questions around how the students are going to be really important because of the way they organize their lives and work and what they do during that break period and rely on that for, and I think that's going to be a really important thing to make clear. And then the other thing that I think you might want to think about or be prepared to talk about, there was two mentions of the Martin Luther King holiday and not having classes then, and I wondered what the impact on that would be for staff, whether that would be some sort of holiday, and also that Wednesday before break, and although staff does not routinely get time off immediately when students do, I think because it's new, the question may come up, and I just raise that for consideration as you talk through this.
You mean the Wednesday before Thanksgiving?
Wednesday before Thanksgiving and also Martin Luther King Day.
Mm-hmm.
If the university has a new policy around that, will that impact faculty and staff? It's come up before.
Yeah, because Martin Luther King Day is perceived as a holiday.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a federal holiday. It is a federal holiday.
It becomes a holiday here.
Exactly. So that's why, I think it should be talked about.
So we probably need to wrap this up. Any other final points that you'd like us to bring back to the committee? Cool. They would.
We need to have staff.
Leslie, you also mentioned about staff-faculty relationships. Do you want to talk about that? Do you want me to put that on?
I think we need to hone that in a little bit more before we jump into that question.
I understand I'm dismissed.
You are dismissed. Thank you for coming. You're welcome to stay, but... You may leave.
Bill would probably want to put a plug in for a faculty forum that's happening today.
There is one at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
If people are interested. 3 to 4:30 on academic rigor.
Before we move on, can I tell you who I am? So I don't feel so awkward.
Sorry. No.
My name is Melissa Kitchen, and I work in the Department of Horticulture. I just wanted to sit in and kind of see how the meeting went. Because I have applied, and so I wanted to see how things actually happened. But that's why I'm here, that's why I'm on your tech.
Welcome. We are part of our family.
We left them at the door.
We left them at the door.
When men were running the EA,
I didn't feel that when I came. I'm going to disagree with you on that. Okay. Anything else?
No.
No. We were quiet until Billy left, and then now you're voice.
He's close enough to you that you can hit him.
I could, but that would be,
upsetting.
Upsetting, yeah. Violence in the words, that's right. It would be, what is it? Disrespectful and
uncivil.
That one was one.
Yeah, uncivil.
Okay, so moving on. So report from the chair. I only have very few things to report at the moment. We had a George Peter Award reception last Wednesday, and thank you for those of you who could be there with us on the very short notice. Just so everybody knows, it was pulled together on very short notice. So I appreciate those of you who could be there very early in the morning to congratulate Joanne Shepherd with us. And we will be getting ready to pick our next round of award winners as soon as I can get a meeting together with folks. What else? Leslie and I are meeting with Mary, and Leslie, Beth and I are meeting with Mary next week. Does anybody have anything that they would like us to bring up in our next meeting with her?
Do you want to discuss this resolution with her?
Yeah, I think that'll be one of the things we can bring up, and just to give her the heads up on where we're
see
going with that.
Says. Mm-hmm. That might be a good idea, might be a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see how the conversation goes around the table and then maybe make a decision after that.
Did you folks talk about staff faculty stuff much when you talked to her? As far as staff faculty relations? Because, and I hope we can visit with Bill again on this. I've been doing some training out at Thornwood and then just, you know, odds and ends around campus. And I've never heard so many staff folks just despondent about treatment from faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the staff who's been cut the last couple of years. And I don't think it's asking too much of the faculty to have a certain amount of professional decorum and respect for the job that the staff does. And I've just seen some really people that I respect and well-meaning, good-intentioned, hard-working people feeling like they've been treated badly. And feeling like they're having a recourse because it's the faculty and it's us in the trenches. So I find it pretty. I find it to be a disturbing trend that I hear more and more.
And I think you're reminding me of the conversation that we had about the bias protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep. In terms of that being a when we think about bias and we think about there's certain groups we've always looked at, but have we looked at status at university as
right.
one of the bias,
mm-hmm.
potential bias groups?
Right.
And that being, you know, faculty versus staff
or
you know, supervisor to employees. And I think that's a very real issue. And I would like to argue it's incredibly prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to the civility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Peace.
And it's not necessary.
It's not necessary.
You know, I mean, Bill and his predecessor Charlie, just wonderful guy,
yes.
accessible and just,
mm-hmm.
you know, not snobby and just like, what do you need? How can I help? Let's work together. And then some of these other folks are just jerks,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, it doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
Not when people are worried about their jobs and other stuff.
So I did raise the question with Bill, which is why he asked me about it before he left. He didn't feel like he was necessarily the right person to talk about it, so that's why I feel like we need to find the right people and get them in the room. He's willing to participate in the conversation, but I'm not sure he's the only person that we want to have it with.
So is that a conversation that would be a good topic of discussion with deans if we could get deans in the room?
Maybe, yeah.
Jerry, were you here when Scorton was here last? And I sort of grilled him on that subject.
I think so. He was sitting here, but David was there. Yeah.
I know staff members with doctorates, and
mm-hmm.
you know, there's
sure.
100 million projects to bring in faculty, and where's the incentive for the staff? And he said it's trickle down, and that's a joke. So I did grill him for you. I accomplished nothing, apparently.
Well, I think it's a really important issue, and I think it comes down to almost, you know, you'd say it, but training the faculty on how to behave.
Human.
And holding them accountable
mm-hmm.
for it. And that's I think that's the greater challenge.
Mm-hmm.
They're freelancers. I mean, they're entrepreneurs. They don't have bosses. And that's a very hard thing. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the person who would have to even approach that topic.
It's not fun. Having had to hold faculty accountable, it is not fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and I'm hearing a lot from staff, too, about pressure that they're feeling because you know, just they're held accountable to certain deadlines and things, and they have to push on the faculty to meet their deadlines, and they're getting a lot of blowback from them. You know, I don't care.
Or nothing, right, or nothing.
Right.
You know, I don't have to respond.
You know, I had a staff member who got something dumped on them, and the faculty's response, because she gave it to the 11th hour, was, well, I guess you better drink a lot of coffee and stay late tonight.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just such a horrible response. And, you know, I don't know the answer to the question, but we need to do some education for the faculty, and I think maybe even some education for managers and units so that when their staff come to them, they can dialogue with the department chair who does have authority over the faculty member in some way.
This is a good issue for the employee assembly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like,
mm-hmm.
this is kind of like cuts across the entire campus and people are dealing with it at various levels. And I don't know if any of you have done training at Thornwood before, but it's good because you're in a room with 25 people from all over campus, you know, and it's just interesting to hear what people's lives are like. And this has been a universal thing of like professional people, mature people, you know, not whiny, not, you know, just saying, like, gosh, I'm dealing with this, getting beat down like this.
I think, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think Kathy and Chris have mentioned that there's some sort of training for faculty.
Yeah, there is.
But are they required to do that? Is it by choice?
It's kind of by department, by department. I know Cal's has been very active and involved. Pam Stouser is really the liaison on the team that focuses on the faculty development. Might be good to have her come in and talk a little bit about that program. I know they go through like notice and respond, and it's like week long, and they do it during the summer months.
It's also helpful if they go to the HowlCraft program.
Mm-hmm. I think it may be a version of the HowlCraft or faculty.
David, were you trying to say something?
Yeah. Do we have, like, I just had to go through the whole annual review process. I don't remember what they call it, but is there one the other way from staff to supervisor? Like, I would love to review my supervisor and have that go to someone that actually matches.
Does
that seem fair?
I don't think that there is one. It goes top down. But if you do like the HowlCraft program, there is a 360 review process. So you review above you and below you and to the side.
Can we establish one as the assembly and implement it for all staff members here? Review their supervisor?
I think that might be something that we could bring to Mary. I don't know that we could implement that. I don't know that that would be. I mean, you're in HR, so what's your...
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be good maybe Kathy and Chris, who really manage the performance management program for the university, good to bring them in and talk to them.
How empowered would staff members feel? I mean, it's not much, but it's like, wow, at least you get to say something.
Are you looking for an opportunity to say it directly to your supervisor or to write it to someone else who needs it?
Just someone else sees it, someone that can do something about it. I mean, for dire situations, I mean, I'm not that bad, but if you really have an issue with someone and nothing is ever done about it.
Because the dialogue is a dialogue.
Maybe if you'd be anonymous or something.
Yeah. It could be a Facebook, you know, one of those websites, Rate Your Professor?
Survey Monkey, yeah. RateYourSupervisor.com.
Oh my God.
We bring it up to the trustees, the next trustees meeting, let's do a presentation on that.
Yeah.
No, I think that's, you know, I know that we've spoken to Mary a bit about, you know, faculty and staff relationships, but getting to where we can actually do something about it, you know, it's hard to find a real place to start. But maybe the deans are the first step since they're right there with the faculty.
It reminds me of something what you said. Remember when Mary had skip level meetings?
Mm-hmm.
It was where you met with your boss's boss. And she developed some programming around that where people met with her and worked on a special project for her from all different parts. And it was an opportunity for her to talk to a different couple of people, and it was an opportunity for those employees to see some more potential in where their careers might go.
Hari?
Is this just a problem of faculty not always being good managers, or is it just a problem in general that in a lot of parts of the university, somebody ends up in a management position because they're good at something other than managing, and the management kind of gets overlooked?
Yeah, something. Yeah.
I think it might be good to look at that as not just a faculty problem.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not, like in Tanya's case, your supervisor that doesn't do your performance style is not a faculty, or is it not?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I think it's, yeah, it's an issue all over the place. I think it's a harder issue with the faculty to the staff because you have no avenue.
Yeah.
You know, at least staff, I mean, not that it excuses it, but you can hopefully have some avenues. I mean, I think it's hard with your supervisor, but I think it is an issue across the board in general.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy and Chris have said that as well, that, you know, you have people who are very good in technical piece moving into a management role, and they don't do well with the people end of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not tenured supervisors
right.
either.
Right. That's the difference is once they're tenured, they're here.
Right.
They should still be held accountable. Mm-hmm.
Even just a gentle reminder, you're dealing with people, yeah. You know?
Faculty I know who you'd want to say it to would not be receptive to anything.
Well, they wouldn't interpret it the way that you intended it to be interpreted.
Because according to these faculty, we are functioning. That is our role.
That was the exact word I think.
That
was used, yes.
Linda, I've been called a functionary by two completely different faculty.
Yeah, I was called a functionary, actually.
That what you're referring to? Yeah.
Felt very good.
Hard to, you know, it's hard to change that kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the message that needs to come across mm-hmm. to the faculty that whatever they want to consider us, we're still trying to do our job, and they need to help us do that because we can't be good support staff for them if they're not giving us what we need to get the job done. Mm-hmm. You
that's
pretty good. I usually can't think that bad.
Can that be the assembly's official motto?
Better functionaries and
a nice script font.
I think we need banners.
Yeah,
banners with that on it. Cornell staff, better functionary than dysfunctionary.
We'll get the articles in the paw print.
Too bad we didn't get it in the flop print.
Yeah.
That
would have been kind of.
But it would ring too true.
Yeah.
Anything else on that particular topic? So, yeah, I'll bring that to Mary.
Okay. Thank you.
And just the one other thing I wanted to throw out there is to thank Linda for coordinating all of us for Soup and Hope and for those who were able to be there. I think both events went off really well. And
I love my apron.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Me too.
Apron.
I used mine the other day.
Did you?
So, you know, I think if we can just keep doing that every year, I mean, I think it's a great thing for us to be involved in and ensure we do that. So that's all that I had. So, meeting minutes. Any changes, corrections?
Hopefully when I get married, I'm going to do it.
Sure. Oh,
yeah. Better for the
wonderful last name.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a little grammatical one.
Mm-hmm.
The second page, second from the bottom paragraph,
mm-hmm.
and the small awards the EA is beginning to give to employees.
Yep.
Okay. The 200 is.
Yep.
Anything else? I'll make a motion to approve the minutes with the changes.
Second.
All right. Anyone? All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. All right. Curtis, do you want to talk about elections?
Yes. Woo-hoo! So we have extended the deadline, I just found out. We did have another election EA open forum. Sadly, not that many people attended, only EA current members. So I encourage if you still haven't decided to apply and you want to apply and be on the EA, please be on the EA. We're really looking for non-exempt staff right now. So if you have any friends, colleagues, know anyone in non-exempt positions that are interested in running for the EA, please let's get on board. And then we changed, one of the things that we did do, which we didn't mention here, we did figure out the election. So what's going to happen is we're not going to do non-exempt exempt. What we're going to do is just going to open it up and we vote from whomever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to pull it out in the tally pool, like for the EA positions and for the, not EA, for the non-exempt, for the exempt, and then from the like, large members. And we thought that would be a much simpler process than trying to have people vote in three different boxes or areas.
Mm-hmm.
How many open positions do we have and how many applicants came in?
So we have 5 people running currently.
8.
8. Yeah. Excellent. 8.
Yeah, we're improving.
Good.
Awesome. And we have 15 open spots. So, well, you know, as people are expressing interest, we're still having them put their stuff in so that we can have as many people running as possible. And then after that, we will spend some time, hopefully everyone, trying to encourage people to submit interest for the fall, and then we would appoint other members. Mm-hmm. And we've had to do that in the past. But Ari, you wanted to say?
It's just the verdict that we will have an election.
Next week? No. I think so. Everything's moving forward to that way, and I don't think that we should not have an election.
We've got a Kindle to give away.
Yes, we have a Kindle to give away, but also I just think it would be pretty bad if we didn't run an election, regardless of if we can staff every seat or not.
So. But really encourage non-event. Mm-hmm.
So how does the election work if you, so let's say you have 8 candidates, and I log in to vote, and I can select all 8 to get a vote?
Well, you would rank your people in order of your preference.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So you'd have the 8 candidates and you would rank them, and then what would happen is when Ari goes behind the scenes into the tallying program, they'll say, okay, who were the top exempt, who were the top non-exempt, and would seat those, and then whatever's left over would go into the at-large.
Okay.
And we have some of the seats are designed as one-year seats for next year because we added to the EA, so my sense would be those would be the last ones that we would fill. Those would remain empty, so if we had to appoint people next year, they would go into those terms since they're appointed rather than elected.
Hmm. How many of us don't have to run?
Sorry?
How many of us are not? 2, 3, 4?
No, you
plus 8
the
we have 12 people.
So right. So people who are remaining on for another year, Curtis, Leslie, Jason and Gary. So everybody else,
you have 3 rooms here?
Mm-hmm. Democracy.
We have 12 people
there. Benign.
Are you running again?
I am. Okay, and so is Linda, and so is Mom.
Yay!
And Gemma, right?
Yay!
And Leslie and David, you decided to. Okay.
Yay! Are you part of the 8 people?
Yeah.
Yay! Yeah.
Melissa. Yes. And Melissa are only new, I
like
think.
My
oh, no, we have three new.
Yeah, actually, the person that I contacted,
oh, good.
She was there for putting in her paperwork, and I went in and turned mine on.
Excellent.
And
excellent.
I think she'll be very good.
So I talked to Nancy for a little bit this morning because she couldn't be at the meeting today, but she did say that she'll go ahead and run all the profiles and everything in the next PowerPrint, and we'll have some room to put in another pitch for people to encourage them to consider getting involved. So hopefully we'll garner some more interest and then could look to be appointing people so that we're not waiting till the fall to appoint.
I have a weird kind of election-related question. How long is the last election profile going to remain on the website?
They stay there forever.
Do they have to be there forever? Or?
Actually, although we haven't implemented it for everybody, the policy is supposed to be we'll remove them when the term that the election was for is completely over. So, 2 years after the election.
Oh. Okay.
So it's up there for another year, Jason.
Wow.
That was actually a consideration when I was filling it out. I was like, oh, is this like a permanent record?
Yeah. So I come from it from a privacy perspective because I was data mining my own self on the internet, and of course that page connected to my picture showed up. I guess, you know, from a privacy perspective, I'd prefer those pages to be internal to Cornell's IP space only or CU WebAuth protected.
That's an Ari question.
Or take the photos down.
But why?
He doesn't like having.
I don't want to have my picture and name out there for forever on something that's.
I mean, forever. I mean, I guess like CU protecting it is not just internally to like.
Meaning that Google can't crawl it, and you know, so somebody wants to find me or anybody else.
Stalker.
Yeah.
It's
stalker.
It's
yeah.
Be out there forever. I think as Ari said, it would be a 2-year period while you're. And
the price of public life there, Jason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I totally understand, you know, privacy issues and all that around that. And quite honestly, there were some things up on the assembly's website that we've been contacted by former students that they are doing job searches and whatnot and kind of test out the waters and Google mm-hmm. their own name and everything and see what pops up. And we've had students contact us asking, you know, gosh, that sounds so stupid and it was 8 years ago. Please take it down. And so that's where we got to the, well, it's relevant while you serve. And so, you know, we kind of feel like it helps make you accessible too, not only during the election, but as a representative. And so I guess there are trade-offs, but...
Well, could you...
So are the pictures...
Thing, but could you prevent Google from crawling it? Does it need to be Googled?
But it,
then you prevent
it,
lots
you prevent
of people
from searching,
searching and finding, you know...
Well,
here's my question, Jason. Is it the picture or the info or both?
A little of both, mostly kind of the bad burst star picture. We can get away from having them take the picture.
They're not taking them anymore.
Yeah. If you like a different picture, we'll put a different picture up if that will help.
Well, can I use my glamour shot?
That will help me for the time being. That'll be enough. If we can swap the picture, I'll provide you.
And the only other thing I can say is in terms of your what you choose to write on your statement, you might want to consider that it will be up in public space, and so you may want to read your statement with that perspective, that understanding.
I don't have a problem with the statement.
Okay. So, yes, Amy will be happy. Okay. In fact, we have 3 people trained in the assembly's office to back her up.
That'll be a good compromise for me for now. So.
No, happy to do that. Happy to do that.
But I think you bring up a good point. I mean, it's kind of like even if it goes into a paw print, the idea that paw print might go digital and it might be archived.
It is.
It is.
I mean, yeah. I mean, even more. So I mean, like that information is. I mean, I guess when I thought like assuming this role comes a level of openness and transparency and availability to the other staff. But I also think you mentioned a good point. Is it necessarily relevant for people who are not involved in the Cornell community to be have access to this knowledge and information? And I mean, I think the difficult part just trying to figure out how to filter is the difference, the digital divide that even exists among our staff. And, you know, is that necessarily the best approach going forward?
Well, from a technical perspective, the way that most people get their information about Cornell is through third-party websites yeah. like Google, mm-hmm. And there's no way.
I mean, I Google everything.
I don't know a way around yeah. that problem.
I can't find anything on the Cornell website.
Well, the other thing is you can do Google Alerts, and if you are concerned about something like that, put an alert on your own name. And you'll see what comes up as things appear and come up, and then you'll be aware of what's happening.
Any other thoughts on elections? Care fund committee. That's Linda. Linda.
And Jeff,
I'm sorry.
No, but actually, we were on the agenda, but you're part of the care mm-hmm. committee. So just to refresh everyone's mind, the care fund is Cornellians aiding and responding to employees. It's an emergency fund, previously known as the emergency grant fund, and it was handed to the weedy folks from the EA about a year and a half ago, maybe a little more. The committee has turned it around, gotten it out there, and we had a big meeting today to make some improvements. But just to give you a little bit of history, when we started opening up this fund in its new version, It was November 2010. And since that time, we have given out $14,000 of funds to people who were undergoing emergencies. We've gotten, I give some statistics, we've gotten 16 applications. We have not approved all of them. We've only probably approved half of them.
Six.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it has done so much good for the people who it was meant to serve. That said, we've spent down our operating budget to, we only have enough money left for 1.5 more grants.
Wow. Assuming a full funded grant.
That's right. Assuming a lot of things. But in general, we should have probably started fundraising, but we didn't realize this was going to be such a big crisis time for people.
How much money did we have to start with?
Well, we do have money in the long-term investment pool. So there's money there. I'm trying to figure out how to access it. So there was about $40,000, 20 in each account, approximately. And we've almost, I guess there was less than 20, because we've almost given out all of the operating accounts, but we still have money in the exam account. So it's not a dire situation, although giving out awards is completely based on having money. So if we don't have money, we don't have awards. And that's how we would operate until we got some money. So because we have a relationship and a partnership, and the relationship right now is that there is one EA member who participates on the committee, and that's written into the charter or the bylaws of the CARE Fund Committee. But actually we have two, but anyway. that's just a coincidence. I'm coming to the EA to see if we can partner or generate some ideas for fundraising with between the two groups and other volunteers outside. And I guess I would just love to hear a discussion or a response and then a plan for getting something going.
Oh, well, we talked a little bit about the CARE Fund. Were you at the meeting?
No, but I heard about it.
Oh, okay. And about the CARE Fund at the election meeting, because
at our mini EA meeting.
At our mini EA meeting. We had so many people. But what I did was, in the fall, in the hotel school, there's an event planning class that actually puts on a fun auction. It's an amazing event. And they raise money. And each fall, the students get to decide who the money to go to for a charity.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked the professor, how do they pick? And it's up to the students. But there is an opportunity, and he thought that might be something that the students might be interested in if you can pay, that it's not us faculty give us your money kind of thing. But I thought he was really open to that. And then also, I am the staff advisor for the event catering. I forget what the name of the organization is, because I'm a bad advisor. but what they do is they help like other student organizations plan big events if the other organization doesn't know how to do it. And my student group said they'll be willing to help if you guys decide on something. So you have hotelies who are really creative, much more than I am.
Fantastic.
Oh,
so can you be the committee's contact for getting these people's names?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of a time frame, it sounds like we have a short-term need and a long-term need, both. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's very
accurate. I mean, what Curtis is describing would, particularly with the class, would accomplish a longer-term need. But in the time between now and then, it sounds like we might need to do at least some awareness raising about the website and about how people can donate and that sort of thing.
Yes, and so right now people can donate through the website, but they don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have opportunities to communicate with staff and faculty. My hope, and I do want your feedback on this, is that a group of people, not necessarily the EA, sit down, put their heads together, come up with a plan, and if they need help executing it, they could ask it for it to be in the EA newsletter or ask for whatever else we might need.
So maybe
just in thinking about trying to pull together a group of staff, is this something that we would put out, say, in the EAE News or some sort of article in the paw print saying, if you're interested in doing some kind of fundraising type of thing, you know, we're going to form some sort of committee.
Well, there's a link to a fund where you could give your credit card number or something. That's a great first step.
So in terms of committee, in my opinion, and I'm not averse to giving my opinion at all times, a smaller committee is probably better than a larger committee. And so I'm not sure we need to advertise it, especially because I know at least one person who would be on the committee. Perhaps a couple people from the CARE Fund committee. And we just need some people to dedicate some time to come up with a plan that we can execute. And if it's an event, if it's a big thing, then we might need to call on volunteers and helpers.
You might, since it's only been since November, this might be too new, but if you had a longer history of benefactors, you might recruit some of them to participate in the planning.
That's awesome.
Well, and giving back and
actually, we just got an email from one of the people that got the money. If I can read it real quick.
You just got it?
Yeah. Oh. She said, "I'd like to thank the CARE Fund administrators, faculty, staff, and others who made the assistance possible. Knowing that our university is even more awesome than I realized makes me very gratified to have served here for nearly 30 years. We are so appreciative of the help that it cleared us to pay two medical bills with it. No one likes to ask for help, but if you have to and there's someone there to help you, this is a great thing. Thank you from the bottom of my heart."
Please forward to the faculty.
There is a payroll deduction process in place, just so we're not forgetting that. Yeah, we put that in place as part of the campaign, and there is through
United Way campaign.
Through development.
I thought I saw that.
Yeah,
we raised $3 billion, so raised three. But there was talk of a more aggressive ask for donations as part of the campaign to staff, but I think that was toned down given the economic environment that we were all in 08 and to then. And I haven't heard any talk about it, but I do know that that is in place, and so if one cared to give to the university as part of the campaign that we're in to raise money, it can be directed 100% to this fund.
Okay.
And I know that because I did that.
Excellent.
And so that is possible, just so you're aware. And just from a historical perspective, as an idea, the auction was a very popular event year in and year out. And so I raised that only as an idea that people knew about it, looked forward to it, was a great event.
Yeah, and if we decided to do an auction, which is a great idea, it would be a big event. It would take a lot of legwork by a lot of people. Yeah.
Well, and that's why I'm thinking a committee that's just doing that rather than trying to put that in this group. Finding some other people. Like I'm thinking there's people in arts and sciences, they coordinate a raffle every year for the Arts and Sciences Picnic. We maybe can get someone who does that over there to come in and help do that with this group.
So if the committee were, well, some committee, if I were to come up with a blurb, it could go in paw print, it could go on the EA newsletter, it could go in the work life email, and we could ask people we know, like the person who coordinates the Arts and Sciences thing. That can be done by the end of the week.
And I think something else that maybe we can do, like I loved the email that you just read, and maybe an article in the paw print that has that without a name attached to it, but just to say the CARE Fund, and it helps people, and if they gave permission to use something like that, I think that goes a long way to kind of showing people that it is helping people and they're out there, because some people may never come in contact with it, may never know about it. So I think it's just a nice reminder of, and then it's a link that says you can donate here, or we're forming a committee, or do you know someone who can make a donation of something for an auction kind of thing?
Yeah. You know what might be nice? I was just thinking, you know, I'd be happy to make a piece of opal jewelry and donate it for auction. And maybe some of the staff members who are artists or have a craft or something on the side would be willing to donate some of their items, so to kind of celebrate that in our community might be
a good idea.
We did that at our church. We did an art show. It wasn't a sale, so we get our stuff back. But anybody who is an artist was invited to bring stuff. And it's a nice way to engage with the community and with your personal
funds. It's very interesting because you never know what people are doing. I mean, you do stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
So maybe that's what we can do with that.
Employees
to donate things like that.
Yeah, there's the people who do the pottery and you know, I mean, I think
that
there's a lot
of really, you know, like a craft trade auction or something like that with local.
And I think that's a great opportunity to showcase the skills.
Yeah.
Services too, like what if, you know, you know how to do taxes, could you donate your services?
Sure.
There is the Paul Print photo contest, and Nancy and Donna did a nice job last year of showcasing, and those there were some beautiful, and we may be able to get some of the winners or those who are recognized to donate or something like that. And, you know, so there's a pool of people to ask.
Personally, we get the students to run the auction.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Perfect.
So I will work on getting a blurb, but also, is there anyone in this room from the EA or not in this room from the EA who would like to volunteer to be on the committee with me? If so, let me know. No, you're not.
I won't be here much, but
no, I'm not accepting.
All right. Well, I will make something.
Anyone but Tanya.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Anyone but Tanya.
Okay. Fine.
I will help you.
I can, but I can give you a list of people who hit me up for donations at the Schwartz that you can hit up for donations. How's that?
It would be nice if we can have any employee musicians donate their bands.
And we can make bracelets
that
say, "What would Tanya do?"
That'd be lovely. All right. So looks like we're gonna move something forward on this. So Beth, you can update us next week.
Okay. Thank you.
So, David, want to talk about the Transportation Advisory Committee and the proposed resolution? I don't know if people had an opportunity to look at that, but...
Does anyone have a copy that says Transportation Services, not PAC?
No.
Oh.
So if you scratch the TAC, just change that to Transportation Services.
Yeah.
That was my error. Sorry.
Anyone have any thoughts on this? So maybe we'll over it, or
have people had a chance to read it, or
I have two comments.
Okay.
One is at the very last line. I don't have it in front of me, but they were all whereas is. I think the last one is be it
therefore resolved.
Okay. So the last one would have to be something besides a whereas. And then the other question I had is, and maybe I missed the discussion, but did that final number for the suggestion come about as a result of a discussion here, or is that what we're talking about?
It actually came out of a discussion David and I had a little bit about the fact that, like, I have a permit for my car, a regular permit, but then I also have a secondary permit to park a shortened period of time in another lot, nights and weekends, and I pay an annual flat fee of $58 or something for that.
Okay.
You know, we were kind of looking at that as if, you know, someone has a car permit and they want to maintain their car permit, but then they want to be able to have the luxury of riding their motorcycle at times, then it's just that kind of thing. Because they won't obviously be driving the car and a motorcycle simultaneously.
I hope not.
Oh. Are you a motorcycle? I was. How did you come up with suggesting the $60 annually or versus just saying... We think you should just keep what it is as is.
Well,
$60 a lifetime, like, I know we've, in a past conversation, we said, like, Well, motorcycle people usually only get a few months to ride in anyway. You know, I mean...
Well, I guess I looked at it as a $60 lifetime is ridiculously cheap, no matter how you slice it. It's, I mean, people can keep their bikes for 20 years, and... most people, like even me when I was riding, instead of $60 lifetime annually would have been fine with me. It's really not that much money, and it's like $10 a month if you can ride for 6 months out of the year.
Oh.
And I've talked to a bunch of people who are like, yeah, I paid an annual. It wasn't really a huge deal.
What did the people think about the 108 annual?
Nobody wants to pay $108 a year to ride for 6 months. I mean, it's just...
And
if it had been $90 a year last year, it wouldn't be a big deal. But going from $60 lifetime to $108 annual is like, what? Like, it's just way over the top.
Do you $60 lifetime, is it really tied to the actual motorcycle? Mm-hmm. Or so if you traded in and got a different motorcycle,
yeah,
you'd have to get it. Okay.
Because it's a sticker, right?
Yep.
Just out of curiosity, could it be similar to, if you're someone who has a car permit, and that could get rid of this, but I have a car permit and I can use either or of two cars. You know, I have two license plates on there that rather than having a separate permit for your motorcycle, you have a tag that's good for your car and good for your motorcycle, and as long as you're only taking one in, there should be no extra charge. Because I can take one car or another car.
But how would you make a tag that somebody can move
permits?
Yeah, because my permit has three cars on it. It's all the vehicles in my house.
Yeah.
I think the difference is the tag that you move from one vehicle to the other,
mm-hmm.
and you aren't able to move that tag to your motorcycle. So if you have a permit tag on your motorcycle,
you can't.
Conceivably, your husband drove the motorcycle, and you drove the car, you would have both vehicles on campus, which is different than one tag for three vehicles. You'd have two tags for two vehicles.
Well, you'd have to solve for that, but I don't like having to switch. I mean, I know it's kind of a tangent. I don't like having to move that tag from car to car. Why can't I just have two tags?
Because then you could drive two
cars. Both cars on campus.
Yeah, how does that make any sense? Nobody else in my household works at Cornell. Why would I drive two cars at Cornell?
Because somebody else might be in the wellness program.
Well, the other thing is you may have, okay, so I drive my car and Leslie drives her car. I put both my car and her car on my permit. I have two. I give one to her and only pay
well,
one.
Well, I think you could have control based on that on where the vehicle registration goes to. But
yeah.
I'm just saying, I think they could just make this a little bit more flexible and slightly on the honor system.
Is the reason why they're making this change, is this for financial reasons? And the only reason I ask is because if we pass this resolution, they say, okay, $60, then they tack on that price to people who are parking here already, or they might start charging for a lot and stuff like that. So, I mean, what's the reason why they're saying that they have to increase it?
It's really just because they're trying to simplify the whole system. And I guess they felt that this was way far behind, and that's why they simply based on that one-third perimeter rate. Like, that's all I asked them numerous times. I'm like, so how did you come up with this? And it's strictly, they feel they can fit three bikes in one car space, so they cut the price in a third, and that's how they came up with it. And, like, they're just reducing all the number of permits and, like, just trying to simplify and bring everything up to speed. And that's the only motivation. I mean, they know that there's a very small pool of people, and they're not going to make millions of dollars off this. They know that.
They make it in their parking ticket.
So, your resolution mentions it needs to be grandfathered in. Was there intent to not grandfather the people?
I'm not sure. That's why I put it in there. I'm not sure, because if I still have my bike, there's no way in hell I'm going to start paying $108 a year if you already sold me a permit for $60 lifetime.
Yeah.
I didn't renege
on that. So now you're never
going
to get a new bike?
No.
So, in interest of time, because we only have 4 minutes left, do you know if this is gone? If the proposed change has gone to President Scorton already?
They're just waiting.
They're waiting to hear back from him.
Mm-hmm. Which makes me nervous. I feel like if we wait two more weeks, it could be too late.
Well,
I
think
we can always reverse.
something we're ready.
Is this something that had to be approved by President Swarton, by them?
That's, well, Transportation Services, I guess, has forwarded it to Swarton's office for approval.
It's the whole rate package, not just motor.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right. Okay. It's the whole
that goes to the for approval.
Well, if anything, out of this, if anything, I think that the grandfather thing has to still ride.
I also like the idea that we were talking about having, even though you don't like to move it, but having one permit that works for both your bike and your car, and finding a way to solve the problem, even if it's having a sleeve that gets
that's right.
Yeah. That sticks to the bike, and you can just slide the permit into the sleeve or something.
Yeah, because in reality, unless they're stealing your tag and your license plate,
that's right.
You know.
That's right.
So, yeah, a plastic little insert kind of thing could work.
Put a snap on it to make it harder for them to get it out.
So if the EA wants to move forward a resolution sooner rather than later, but we have a few extra ideas,
we can do it via email.
Well, could we just include either make the price of this, or have a discussion about having a dual tag, or, you know, give them an either or in a resolution, just to address it.
All right, Jason, can we either or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're not voting on this today.
No, we can't vote on it.
We got two, you know, we got two more weeks before we vote on it and submit it. So for that 2 week delay,
you can add a resolve that would request that Transportation Services explore the possibility of whatever it is you're suggesting that they explore, and you could add that as a resolve at the end.
Okay.
You can also just send an email to President Swarton's office saying
you have some concerns about this,
about the rates package that we have until
I like that idea.
Yeah, so for our next meeting. So what that
coming.
Yeah, so what that would mean is that we need to firm up language by a week from today so that everybody has it by next Wednesday to vote for at our next meeting. Mm-hmm. So we'll go back and forth via email, and then we can have it. But I will email David Scorton.
Okay. So just add a couple of things to this.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised. I'm sure they become added to this.
I totally agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the UA, Ned came back on this as well, and he was saying that they would love to kind of be in on what we're doing. So I don't know if you heard back at all from Ned about any of this, but
I got a couple ideas from him. Things were more about you know, people who hold motorcycle permits also hold car permits. So maybe I'll incorporate the dual permit thing into that line. That's what Ned had to say, but who, like, maybe
well, he
should I talk to Ed more about, like, maybe you and EA can submit.
I think it would be, since you're on the Transportation Services Committee, it would be great to submit the revised resolution to that committee and see if it can go up through the UA too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, well, these guys from Transportation Services come to that committee meeting, and
the people you want to know about it more than anyone.
Yeah,
right?
You want them to know. But I think, and Ned said he will bring it to the UA as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ned said he would bring it to the UA, so
yeah.
We just keep him in the loop on everything.
Okay.
So we are officially, unfortunately, out of time.
Aww.
So I know you want to talk about FSAC.
I was just going to ask everybody if they could fill something out.
So you want to contribute it?
Yes. Can you, like, try to get it? So what we're working, and thank you, Penny. Thank you for understanding. We're working on starting to try to strategy for communicating the new faculty and assistance program. So please don't share this, because these are really, really just concepts at this point. If you could take a look at some of these concepts, and, you know, from your standpoint as employee and trying to put on diverse employee hats, when you read those, which ones do you think sound the best to you as kind of, you know, as we go through and start communicating? So whatever you can do to give us that insight would be wonderful.
Okay.
You can, what, maybe send them back to Amy, and Amy can collect them? Amy,
sure.
You want that?
Oh, I'm fine.
So either email or send them back via campus mail, and Amy will collect it and give it to Linda.
Yeah, and my friend, please do not share it. Well, and Melissa, I would love to have your information. If you're okay with that. Yeah, because we're just, you know, we were trying to think of how to get good employees. That's right. Of course. So, yeah.
Okay. So, we didn't get to our full agenda today, so we'll have to add some of these things back in and move them up so we actually get to them at our next meeting. But, motion to adjourn? Excellent. Thank you, guys.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.